Ladies and gentlemen, this is the main event. Fight fans worldwide, you tuned into the number one undisputed boxing podcast today. This is the Boxing Breakdown.
What's up? This is your host, Mark Roxy, and you are listening and tuning in to the Boxing Breakdown. And I am here with my good friend and partner in crime, Mr. Harold Hunt. What's up?
What's up?
Yeah, man. I'm good. Getting started on a nice, brisk, I'd say it's about like 70 degrees over here in Philadelphia area. It is summertime, but it does feel delicious outside. It feels good. I've had a long day, man. A lot of training, a lot of boxing today. And I'm really, really excited to be with you. And I'm really excited to be with our listeners on the Boxing Breakdown. Welcome, everybody. If you are tuning in on Apple Podcasts or anywhere where you get your podcasts, thank you for joining us. Make sure you hit the like and give us a review. You know, tell some friends, share it out with people. And of course, if you are on YouTube, down below, right down there, right? Make sure that you hit... Sorry, Harold. I blocked Harold. Check it out. The subscribe button right there, bro. Make sure you subscribe, like, and hit the notification so we can have you on the podcast with us. If you'd like to make some comments, you can add your comments below, and we will be able to see them as well. I'm going to turn on those comments right now, so I got them if you are joining, if anybody out there is joining. We're just starting a podcast on YouTube. It's pretty hot and heavy on the podcast platform, but you know, we have not done a whole heck of a lot on YouTube, and I'm excited about the possibility of what we can create, Harold. So we are going to chop up a lot of news in boxing, and I think let me see here, right here, what we're doing here. Look at that, my forehead. You see my forehead, Harold?
Absolutely.
All right,
what you got there?
Well, what I want to do is I want to talk about the Charlo versus Castaño fight, bro. Did you see that?
Yes, I did.
What did you think, bro?
Oh, well, from the top, I knew Charlo was going to have to fight. I talked to all my people, and we all was just speculating before the fight. This was not going to be a walkover for him. He was going to have to fight. And turns out he had to fight. And it was great seeing him in a situation where he couldn't be the aggressive person all the time. He had to fight off his back foot. He had to make adjustments. And for him, it was great to see him in the trenches, in the dirt, having to fight. And his opponent was excellent. Castaño was excellent. He came to win. He knew he had the proper tools to win, and he tried to apply them. It was a great fight all the way around.
Yeah, man. Castaño, yo, hats off to you, because you delivered an excellent performance. I think it was relatively, I think across the board, everyone was fairly shocked, unless you know Castaño. Unless you know a little bit about his amateur background, you know a little bit about his pedigree and the caliber of fighters that he's actually faced both in sparring and in fights. And then once you start unpacking some of that, you realize, Charlo was in a real fight, and hats off to Charlo for performing in that type of a circumstance. I definitely think it was a growth fight for him, for sure. And I think Castaño, really cemented his brand and really You know, he's among boxing fans, certainly more notable now than he was before. And I think that's great for him and for Charlo. What did you think about the fight? I mean, like, what did you think about the fight? Like, let's break down some of the rounds and some things that that just stuck out in your head.
Well, the first round that came to mind that I didn't agree with was round number 9. They gave that round to Charlo. And I watched that round several times, and I just could not see how he won that round. But it's all subjective, of course. And that was a swing round that gave him the opportunity to get the draw. They said that Castano was hurt, and I didn't necessarily see that. I saw he was backing up some, but I didn't see him hurt, you know, where he became – he was in a survivor type mode, you know, where he had to just try to stay alive.
Yeah.
He seemed to me he was always offensive, even when he was supposed to have been hurt.
Yeah, well, you know, interestingly enough, I watched the fight. We're on the East Coast, right? The fight came on and I had it, you know, I was in my comfy spot and I was watching the fight. Okay, I wasn't there. So I'm looking at it from the vantage point of how the cameras present it. And we know that when we go to the fights, if you're working the corner or you're in the fight is completely different than what you see on TV.
Yes.
The way they camera it, the way they shoot the angles and the way that they present the fight or the A side is just, it's interesting. It's interesting if you have both perspectives. But I watched this fight and I got up to the 9th round. Right where you're talking about. And I was like, oh my gosh, you know, Castano got that. And then the freaking power went out in my house. Go, 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 go. Lightning.
Pop, pop, pop.
And the freaking TV went out. The TV went out, bro. And I was like, no. I screamed, no, like that. And my wife is like, what's wrong? You know, I'm like, you don't understand. I was right in the middle of this fight. So what I ended up doing is I ended up going back, Harold. I went back and I watched the fight again the following day. Not, you know, I watched it on, remote, whatever, you know, when they replay it or whatever. And I turned the volume off because I had already seen up to the 9th round and I only had up until there one or maybe two rounds for Charlo. I'm sorry, Harold. I only had like one or two solid rounds that I could, and I was watching it. You know, I wasn't scoring it like we score. You know, I wasn't scoring it. I was watching it. I was enjoying it. And so when I went back and I watched the first 9 rounds, I'm like, yo, this is a really close fight, closer than when I first watched it. And but I had a real difficult time giving the fight to Charlo or even a draw. I think it was a one-round differential that I had, Castano up on. And so I guess a draw is warranted if, you know, he is the belt holder. And you know what the saying is, you literally have to beat a man significantly to get that title. You're not just going to have such a close fight and get the title. It's just not going to happen. It just doesn't happen that way.
Well, from a judge's standpoint, we do not subscribe to that. We cannot subscribe to it. And I am not subscribing to that right now. So you can say what you want, but
chop
we
it
are
up.
Taught
Tell me.
That is not ever a factor because we don't know who is the champion, who is not the champion. That's the mandate. Now, I'll leave it there.
No, so, no, don't leave it there. Don't leave it there. Keep going. Because the listeners need to see this. They need to hear the two sides of this, right? Like I'm giving you the fan side. Well, I mean, I'm a coach and trainer, but you know, in that moment, I'm just a fan. I'm watching the fight. So I'm giving you this is what I saw. Now, unpack that a little more, Harold. Come on.
Okay. Number one, I want to keep working. So I'm going to be very measured and careful with my wording.
Of course. Yes.
Okay.
Respect. Yes, of course. You must do that.
Usually you're not supposed to know who's who, period. You don't know who Charlo is, and you don't know who Castanio is.
Right.
You don't know what their records are. You don't know anything. You try to stay away from that. So when you're watching the fight, you don't know necessarily who's who. You know who the titleist is. But in this case, you had two champions. So that should further make you look at it evenly. Okay.
Oh, so, I see.
Mark, what you said, inadvertently is can or cannot be applied. I like to say it's never applied in my case. However, that has been the case. I mean, that has been some of that was said.
Yeah.
I'm not condoning it or I'm not approving it or I have never done it. But since they were both champions, that even put it on a more even a place for me.
Right.
So I looked at it as if they were just plain fighters trying to get their opportunity. And in my mind, that ninth round that was, in my opinion, that was inadvertently given to Charlo was the one that garnered him the draw. In my opinion, that fight was not a successful fight for him. I believe Castano the victor in that fight.
Yeah. No, I hands down, you know, I mean, from the way that I introduced this and the way I opened it up, clearly, you know, I mean, I had, you know, first of all, if you're listening in and you didn't get a chance to see the fight, a little bit of the characteristics of the fight, I mean, Castano, right? Castano is a come forward fighter. He's got the high guard in the fight. He's carrying the high guard for most of the time, walking right in and delivering shots. Charlo in the beginning of the fight in the first three rounds was really out trying to maintain his distance and sticking a jab as he should have. He was getting the instructions from his corner to do that, to stick the jab, to keep him outside, not to allow this gentleman, Castano, to get in the pocket and where he can do his work. And you know, I think Ronnie Shields, was working with Charlo and, or, you know, is his coach and told him, keep him outside. Do not make this fight easy for him. Do not give him that. And it worked. I think when he got the instruction, it worked for a little bit. And then he kind of went right back to the ropes. Charlo's was hanging on the ropes and trying to pull the counters off of his back foot on the ropes. Am I right, Harold?
Very true.
Okay.
He was in the situation was, he attempted to do what was asked of him, to keep it in the middle of the ring, keep that jab out there,
right,
drop those power punches as he was coming in, you know, play the bull and the matador. However, he simply was forced on that back foot. Now, he's not used to being on the ropes, looking for shots or whatever, and he was getting hit with stuff he's not used to seeing come across there. And he got hit with some good body shots that moved him over. He got hit with some left hooks that moved him around. He was trying to come through with that straight right hand, but Castano was coming around that with that left hook and that right hook. And he was just totally out of his element. He's used to being hurting you, and then he'll walk you down. But he was forced to back up. His to the back game on the ropes was not what he needed for this fight, and it proved. And I'm sure he's going to work on that. Now, when he did go in the center ring and he stood in there and he threw the jab and he dropped that right hand, then he made Castano not be as bullish as he was. He was successful.
Yeah.
But he didn't go to that until the end. Now, in my opinion, he was like, I'm not used to being hit like this. I think I can avoid it on the ropes. And you can't avoid anything on the ropes with another gentleman who fights like that.
Yeah.
So once that formula settled in, then he began to be aggressive. I mean, he began to have success. Now, the 10th, 11th, and 12th rounds, yes, they were Charlo rounds. They were. The ninth round, I didn't see it that way. But if you add them all up, it looked like Charlo was able to get a gift, and this unofficial gift, in the ninth round. So I'm looking at a complete change if there's a rematch. Complete change. He's going to stand in there. He's going to take those punches not to give up his back foot because he was on his back foot.
Yeah, for sure.
And he telegraphed a few right hands. He telegraphed them. They come through, and Castano came with that left hook and caught him several times. The body shot the right hand to the body several times. Adjustments are going to have to be made.
Yeah, I agree. And do you know about the rematch, where we stand on the rematch? Because I've heard some news coming across the wire about the rematch.
Yes, yes.
Let's talk about that.
Now, fiscally, a rematch right away doesn't make sense. because there's mandatories lined up. Now, Castano, he's got a mandatory, possibly with Costa Zoo's son.
Yeah, Tim Zoo. Yeah.
Okay, that's a lucrative fight, and he's still champion. And off of his performance with the Charlo, that's going to garner more revenue for that fight. Charlo has mandatories he has to handle. Okay, so he has to handle his mandatories going forward. Now, they both can drop their belts and fight at 160. And say, I'll give up these three belts, you give up yours, and we do an immediate rematch at 160 because we need to settle this. I don't see that happening because the whole allure of the whole thing was undisputed champion.
Right.
So I'm thinking they're going to work themselves back around to each other if, in fact, Castano doesn't lose to Tim Zoo or Lubin happens to upset Mr. Charlo.
Right.
So we got so many variables. But if they both survive their mandatories, if they may get one or two gimmies or whatever, and they circle back around, it'd be a great fight.
Yeah. No, I
just don't see either one of them having a belt when it comes back around. Either Charles is going to give one up because he can't defend them all, or he'll lose one. I don't know about that.
Right.
Or Castano, he could lose to Zoo.
Right, right.
You know, and if he wins, he's still going to have another mandatory before he gets back to Charles. So anything could happen.
Right.
So in my opinion, just a guy out here, I'm thinking we're not going to see a rematch. If we do see a rematch, someone's going to have the belt or someone's not going to have the belt. Or they both won't be champions. They'll just fight because the public remembers a good fight and they can still fight. But I just don't see them getting back together. There's too much money out there with all these belts.
Right.
There's too much money out there right now.
No, I agree. I agree completely. You know, I also think that from a coach's point of view, for Charlo's team, I don't think taking a rematch immediately would be advisable anyway, because as you mentioned earlier, there's some adjustments that need to be made. I think they need to kind of go back there and talk about it, figure out what went wrong, watch the film, watch it back, and really come up with a different set of distinctions for how they're going to go forward with the fight, how they're going to make this fight happen the next time it does happen. And what I can tell you is that Castano is probably like juiced up. He's probably juiced up, ready to go. Like he's ready to go right back in there and go to round, 13, right away because of the kind of performance that he had. And I'm sure he expected it, but not many other people expected it on the outside. So anyway, hats off to Castano and, hats off to Charlo, bro. Cause Charlo, he showed his mettle. He overcame some adversity. So hats off to both of them. Hats off to, Al Haymon and the team there for putting together such a compelling fight. That was fabulous. I enjoyed that. And there needs to be more compelling fights like that, where the fans really win. The fans are the one who won that night because everybody left talking about it in a little bit of shock. And that's good for boxing, man. It really
that
is.
That is great for boxing.
Yeah. So
Mr. Charlo, he really he's very, has a lot of attitude and bravado, but he backed it up because he was down. And he summoned that and he exerted it. So hats off to him. Because a lot of times the bully will talk, but when it comes down to it, the bully won't fight. and he actually, his talk is bully,
right.
But he actually was the bully. He actually fought back to, regain what he had to regain. So I give him all the props. Now, for Mr. Castano, mentally, he feels like he won the mental war. He feels like if I fight him again, he knows what I can do, and I just have to continue that mentally. Because as you said, boxing is how much mental and how much physical. Castano's mental game was on point in that fight. The one who had to bring his mental game up was Charlo.
Yes.
So going into the next fight, that's going to be an interesting dynamic if, in fact, it happens.
Yeah, I agree. And so Harold, that moves us on. And for y'all listening out there, we are going to talk about some news that just came over the wire. This is brand new news, man. I heard this. If you've listened to the recent podcast that we've had, Harold and I were talking about a lot of stuff on the last podcast. And one of the topics that came up was Sean Porter. And I kind of came out of our role of what we were going to talk about. I kind of broke out and digressed a little. And I had to mention that, you know, a guy who I really admire and think is a fantastic spokesperson for boxing, a brilliant businessman, and an incredible pugilist is, you know, Sean Porter. I thought Sean Porter deserved to be, you know, mentioned. And guess what? Here we are. We are going to share with you a little bit of news about Sean Porter. It just came out that Sean Porter will be fighting Terrence.
Drum roll, please.
Yeah, okay. Drum roll. I don't have a drum roll, bro. I have a drum roll. Yeah. Kaboom. Terrence Crawford and Sean Porter is happening. Let's make that thing happen, y'all. It should be happening. It's got to happen because that's going to be a great fight because, Harold, what do you think?
Oh, well, let's start with Mr. Porter.
Yeah.
Now, we know what Sean does. Sean comes 100% at all times. He doesn't go on the back foot at all. He's going to take that punch. He's an ex-football player. So he's got the build. The tuck chin, the heavy shoulders, just his physique, he can take those punches going forward and continue to move forward because he was a running back. So we're not going to see him backing up. That's the best thing about it. And he's going to continue to throw unorthodox punches at all angles and a heavy, heavy clip. That's beautiful. Now we got Crawford, who is a master marksman, counterpuncher, and we are going to see Picasso, man. He's going to be moving on the back foot. He's going to be throwing that punch. He'll be stepping around, and he's going to be dropping left hands, right hands, and either style on either side, left or right. It's going to be the classic bull and the matador. Now, the bull is not going to go back. That's the issue. So he's going to have to be just squashed by power. That's the only way. He has to be dropped in order to do anything. He's going to have to drop him. So unless he can drop him, it's going to be a great fight. It's going to be a great fight. And I mean, Crawford's got power, no doubt. But it's going to be
for old school people. Sell it, Harold. Sell it, baby.
Muhammad Ali and Cleveland Williams. Now, some of you guys may know that's old school. That's in the 60s. But Cleveland Williams was a monster, never took a step back, nothing. A lot of people say this was Ali's greatest fight before he had to go to the military. Right. This was his greatest physical fight as a human being was against Cleveland Williams. And I see this fight similar to that, where Ali had to use all his skills and power and quickness to win that fight because Cleveland Williams was not going to stop coming. And the only way for him to stop him was to stop him where he couldn't move. I mean, he knocked him out. He had to.
Right.
But the run-up to that was a lot. So that's how I see this fight here.
So, Harold, okay, so Sean Porter right now, currently his record is 31 with 3 losses, 31 wins, 17 of those wins coming by way of KO, 3 losses, and 1 draw. And Terrence Crawford is 37-0 with 28 KOs, right, to his name. No losses, no draws. And I think Terrence Crawford, his last fight, according to the record, his last fight was in November of 2020. Right? So I'm just bringing that up. I'm not telling you to do anything with it. I'm just bringing it up.
I can do something with it.
And Sean Porter's last fight was 8/22/2020. So they both have kind of been inactive for the same length of time, you know, with a 2-month differential. Actually 3 months, I apologize, listeners, 3 months differential, November and then August, right? Sean Porter's last fight was in August of 2020, and Terrence Crawford's last fight was in November of 2020, just to be clear, just so everyone that's listening in is really coming along on a ride. But I will tell you, Sean Porter is a... He is. There's no question, bro. He's a dog. There you go, K9. That's K9. This is for K9 Bundridge out there. Yeah, where are my dogs at?
Where are my dogs at? Okay, this is what I got right here. I've got Porter has an advantage here because his last fight was right out of the pandemic. It wasn't anything spectacular or whatever, but he was able to really prepare for it, and he was in his element in that the way he fought was, it wasn't a sparring session, but he was able to kind of, you know, hone in on the way he fights, the way, you know, the way he attacks. Now, his opponent took a lot of good punches. So Porter was able to get off a lot of good punches. So he kind of was in his groove. Now, whereas Crawford, in his fight, that was so easy work for him. He wasn't impressed at all with the gentleman from overseas. He wasn't impressed at all with Kell Brook. Nothing. He was in control from round one till he ended it. So he wasn't impressed, whatever. So he didn't have the kind of firefighter.
Harold, that I don't mean to interrupt you, but that fight with Kell Brook only lasted 4 rounds. He took him out.
Right.
Terrence Crawford took him out in the fourth of 12.
Right.
And actually, you were talking about, just for the listeners who are tuning in, we're talking about Sean Porter fighting Sebastian Formella. That was his name, Sebastian Formella, who Sean Porter went 12 solid rounds with him. And those 12 rounds are really, they are important rounds, okay? They're material. And the reason they're material rounds is as follows. Because Sean Porter worked on some things in those 12 rounds of that fight. And I'm going to talk about in the gym. I'm talking about working on things in the fight. Sean Porter was working on his boxing, his jab, and he can box anyway, but he was working on the jab. He did some stuff in that fight. If you go back and watch that fight, you would see a different Sean Porter than you saw prior to that fight, which I believe was against Errol Spence, where he came up with a split decision 12-round draw, people. A split decision 12-round draw with Errol Spence. Okay, later on in the program, we're going to talk about Manny Pacquiao. Okay, but I want you guys to get that in your head. I know it's a different fighter, but Errol Spence went a 12-round split decision draw in his favor, Errol Spence, against Sean Porter. Okay, just keep that in your mind. All right, that's all I'm saying. So, Harold, anyway, back to Crawford Porter. What do you think?
Well, all I can see is a really good fight in that we're going to see a lot of connected punches. We're going to see clean punches. We're going to see a constant attack mode. It's going to be great from round one to whenever it ends. I'm old school, so I'm just going to drop back to another Ali fight. I must do this. I don't want to say it's like the thrill of Manila, but Ali was dropping those right hands and left hands right on Frazier's head, and he was still coming. Those of you who have watched that fight, you know what I'm talking about. He's dropping it, and Frazier's still bobbing and weaving and coming and taking it and delivering his own left hooks, right hooks, and that is the mode of that fight. I'm on my back foot, but I'm dropping on you, and you're still trying to come underneath me with the hooks. That's what I see. I see a good fight because Porter's got a chin. He does have a chin, and Crawford has power. And enough power will you know, slow you down, but Shauna's really can really take a punch. So I just see great action from round one to round. I just see great action, man. Yeah. I don't see Sean trying to box, any of that. I just see him doing what he always does, because he feels like he can overwhelm Crawford. He's wanting Crawford because he, as fighters say, I see something.
Yeah. Listeners, so Harold, listen.
He's going to get to see it.
How great is it, Harold? How great is it that these two guys get to get off their duckuses and get in the ring and fight? Because both of them, right? The WBO basically mandated this fight, right? They ordered this fight. So this is not like, you know, some concoction outside. It's actually a WBO, you know, is behind it, you know? And it's very interesting.
There's so much more to it, though, Mark. I don't mean to interrupt you, but the political people had to come together and make this happen. That's cool, too.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look, Top Rank obviously wants to get involved and control that. I'm sure, you know, Top Rank is all over that, all over trying to get, you know, making sure that they're controlling that fight. And I know, listen, Sean Porter, see, this is the thing about, this is what I, like, my partner, shout out, Dwayne Fenn, you know, if you're listening in on the program, you know, I want to acknowledge you, Dwayne, and we talk about this all the time, right? Sean Porter always comes up in conversations because this is a guy who's been able to navigate the sport of boxing in a way that's very lucrative for him, right? Yes. This is a guy who does have losses on his record, right? Yeah, he does. But he also manages to continue to position himself in big fights, creating and conducting himself in a big way, delivering great performances in must-see TV. This is a guy that continues to benefit from the talent and skill that he's been able to develop to the point where, you know, he's going to get some big money for this fight. Like, this is a big money fight. They haven't talked about it, but it is, you know, I'm trying to see if I can, you know, see what the numbers are, but they haven't even, I mean, they have like 30 days to figure this thing out, right? So if you're listening in, yes, it's done because they've announced it. It's everywhere. But they still have to work out all the fine details and the, you know, the fine print, right? That's where the devil lives, right? But they got to work that out to get it to the table and make it happen. Right, Harold?
Yes. But, hey, what they say, the devil's in the details.
Exactly.
I'll say this. His work ethic is such that every promoter will want to work with him. For Al to allow him to step across the street, if you will, and fight that is great. Now, imagine this. He wins. The WBO title goes over to Al Haymon, PBC, baby. Oh,
you're talking about Sean Porter winning, right? I was just thinking that.
What happens? Now, since that can't be a possibility, the contracts, the clauses, is there a rematch? Is there an immediate rematch? Can you defend that if you do win that? As you said, Top Rank's going to be all over it. However, we know Al Haymon is going to have his finger on the scale too. So we have to see how that's going to work out. But that scenario has to be looked at. All the belts are going to be over here with PBC, baby. What happens?
That's been part of the master plan anyway. You know that. I mean, everybody knows that. That's been Al Haymon's plan all along. That's why he, you know, invested the money that he, well, that's not why. I mean, he only knows why. But at the end of the day, you know, there's a lot of money been invested in a lot of really high quality fighters. So, you know, and there is a reason why they want those belts.
So he's trying out his first try at that WBO belt. If Mr. Porter is not successful, he'll send somebody else over there because the door is open now.
Right.
If Top Rank will allow these welterweights who are under that other banner to come over and attempt to take that belt from Crawford and make money, the door is open. Right. If Sean doesn't win, he'll trot somebody else over there.
Uh-huh. Right.
Now, there's a possibility that Crawford may come over to PBC anyway. We don't know.
Well,
we have to see how that works out. I'm just speculating. But
why do you say that? Why do you say that?
That reel and see if you can get that WBO over here on my side. And the first one to try is going to be Sean Showtime Porter.
I like the way you say that. I like the way you say that. Hey, let me ask you. I just want to back it up. Let me rewind that for a second, because I just wanted to know what did you mean? Just rewind what you just said, if you remember.
Rewind what I just said.
Yeah, rewind what you just said.
My shout out to Sean Porter.
Or? No, prior to that.
I am at a loss.
All right. And listen, you know what I was going to say? And that's totally fine. I just heard you say something. You know, anyway, we're going to cover it on another episode. I'm not even going to go into it. Never mind. Listeners, okay, forget okay, that. Okay. Forget it. I'm not even going to touch on it. You said something. I was going to
prompt here so I can follow you.
Yeah, well, you know what it is? You know what it is, Harold? I wanted to comment on what you just said. But you know what I know? That if I do that, it's going to take another we're going to spend another 15 minutes on this topic. And the way we have the show lined up today, we weren't going to do that. We weren't going to spend another 15 minutes on Crawford Porter. It was just announced today. We've already spent 10 minutes on it. And, you know, I think, listen, Boxing Breakdown fans, you should be totally pumped up about this fight. Like, I'm serious. Like, I've been waiting to see Terrence Crawford get in the ring. I've been waiting to see Sean Porter. I love Sean Porter. I have a tendency to be, you know, always rooting for the underdog, right? So y'all know that because you always listen to the program. You know, Tyson is clearly like the quintessential underdog, even though he's like the best fighter in the world, right? Well, arguably, Harold, I get it. But, you know, I mean, Sean Porter is just, I think he has a wonderful, wonderful opportunity here, Harold, to upset the apple cart. I'm serious about that. Remember that I said that, okay? Remember that I said that. And maybe it doesn't happen. Maybe Terrence Crawford is just, you know, he's the Don Dada of the division, and it's just not going to happen, right? I get that. I haven't seen Terrence Crawford in a while, but
I'm not going to weigh in on it yet. But I'll say this: I watched Crawford fight, and he's beautiful on either side of the fence, left hand, right hand, movement, power, aggressiveness. He can fight going backwards. He can fight going forward. He's got the angles. I mean, he's got the footwork, and he's got that mean, nasty mentality in the ring, dude.
Yeah.
And he's been so misaligned recently. Everyone's saying, well, you know, you made a bad decision with Bob, and you're not going to get a fight, and look at all these big fights running around here. You don't get nothing.
Right.
Look at you. You might as well retire. Yeah, you are undisputed at one weight class. You might as well take that in the Hall of Fame because you're through here. You're not going to get a chance to do anything at the welterweight because this, that, and the other. So he's got so much he wants to just prove to everyone. And Sean Porter is the perfect foil for that.
Yeah.
I mean, just perfect. Because everyone knows he made Earl fight. Everyone knows he makes everybody fight. And when it's over, you know, it's always debated who won when Sean Porter's in the ring.
Yeah.
The scorecards may say his adversary won, but there's always debate. He has never been, like, beat down or thoroughly beaten where he was, in fact, beaten. Even when Brooke beat him, it wasn't like that. So it's going to be a good fight, man. I mean, but you're talking about upset, so be it.
Yeah, man. I mean, that's what makes compelling fights. That's why it's going to be on TV. Everybody's going to get to watch it. Probably be a pay-per-view, but whatever. You know, I mean, whatever it is going to be a great fight, and I can't wait to watch it, man. I really can't I really can't wait to watch it. And so with that, I think it's time for us to get into the feature discussion, yes. A discussion that I'd love to have with you about Mr. Manny Pac-Man Pacquiao versus Errol Spence Jr. It's imminent, it's coming, and it's going down. So, Harold, what you got?
Well, right now, Errol Spence has gone on record saying he's going to retire Mr. Pacquiao. I don't necessarily see him retiring him. I see if he loses, some promoter is going to come through and give him a farewell fight against someone that he can beat, you know, so he can go out with a win. If he loses to Errol Spence. So this isn't going to be a fight whether he wins or loses that he's going to retire right after.
Right.
I don't see that happening. If he wins, we know he's not going to retire
right.
because it is too huge of opportunity for him to go after that WBO belt, whoever happens to have it. And that fight will be made because of his star power, period. All the stars will align with that. There'll be no political mess with that. If he wins and he wants that WBO belt, they're all going to cash in on that. The sanctioning fees alone would be crazy. And the worldwide population that will purchase that will be just monumental. So if he wins. So that's where we are with that. But yeah. That's what he's saying he's going to do to Pacquiao. Now, I will say this. Pacquiao early can surprise you and hit you with something and knock you down. It doesn't hurt you, but you didn't see it coming, and it caught you off balance. He doesn't hurt you anymore, but he can knock you off balance. He did that to Thurman. In his last four fights, he knocked people off balance. He didn't hurt them, but he knocked them off balance. So Earl's susceptible to that, to get hit. It doesn't hurt. It just knocks him off balance and he goes down and not be hurt at all. So I look for possibly, first three round, you know, possibly knocked down, a flash knockdown, something like that. Earl's pivoting and he's off balance and he gets caught with something because, you know, Pacquiao comes unorthodox. Your thoughts?
Oh, Harold, my thoughts, bro. My thoughts are completely, of course, as usual, somewhat opposite of yours. I feel that, which is great because it gives, you know, listeners, you're out there. This is like a perfect pairing. Harold and I, you know, we always chop up both sides of the coin, you know.
All right, because, come with it.
Yeah. So I am going to tell you that I believe that Manny Pacquiao, record 62 wins, 39 wins coming by way of KO, 7 losses with 3 KOs. He's been KO'd 3 times, 2 draws against Errol Spence Jr., 27-0 with 21 KOs. Solid performances all the way up until this point. He has not even had close to half of the number of bouts that Manny Pacquiao has had. So the question becomes, is his youth going to expose Manny Pacquiao's age? Or does Manny Pacquiao's age and intelligence in the ring experience exploit Errol Spence Jr. and his youth in the ring? So this is going to be, you know, Errol Spence is a classic, you know, I mean, he's a better puncher out of the two. Clearly, Errol Spence has a better punch. You know, he's a better puncher. Manny Pacquiao has better footwork. Manny Pacquiao is faster. When Manny Pacquiao hits you, he hits you and you feel like a brick is going through your face. So, you know, you can ask anybody who he's fought. I've seen articles written and I've heard interviews with, you know, Manny Pacquiao's prior opponents talking about the damage that this, what you would refer to as a little guy, does to them. They've called him a little guy until they got hit by him. And, you know, here's the thing. Even Keith Thurman was exposed by Manny Pacquiao, right? So there's some, you know, correlations you can make there if you choose to. You know, I think, you know, the question, he looks faster. He still looks fast. He doesn't look as fast as he did, you know, early on, which is expected. But Manny Pacquiao has pulled off amazing things in the past. And he is by no means, he should by no means be counted out in this fight. I think if anybody can get give Errol Spence a great fight right now, it's going to be Manny Pacquiao. So that's what I believe. You know, we can chop that up.
Well, we know Pacquiao's power comes from his leg and his trunk. You know, he launches himself in a way the punch is generated from the calves and the thighs and all that in the trunk. And, you know, and inertia comes out at the end of the punch. That's why he has power like that. What he also has is he can deliver that from any angle. From any, he can deliver that kind of power. So his angles have always been unorthodox, as you know. That's why he's so popular, because he hits you from any, you say, where is that coming from?
Right.
Okay, I understand that. I see that, and I know that's happening. So he's going to be applying that early. We have to see if Mr. Spence can take that. Now, if he can take that, eventually those odd angles of getting hit with that, if that doesn't affect him that way, we know what Errol does. He's going to just walk down. You know, he's a straightforward fighter, but the pressure is just relentless pressure. So he's going to be getting peppered left and right and seeing things that he hasn't seen coming from odd angles.
Yes.
But if he adjusts to that, and those things don't hurt him, it should go to the decision for him. If, in fact, he's bothered by these things, he can't get used to these angles coming from this way. And some of that power is actually moving him around some.
Yeah.
And we got a whole different thing. So if Pacquiao is of who he was. Now, when Pacquiao fought Floyd didn't even allow that to even happen. He didn't allow him to even get those angles. He didn't allow him to anything unorthodox. And then he had Pacquiao's head so much where – when Pacquiao did do that, he stepped back from him because he figured he's going to get countered. So all of that translated in the Thurman fight. He knew Thurman could not handle that back and forth type of thing. Thurman was quite, you know, wary of it, and he got hit with it, and he lost the fight because he just simply couldn't. Those angles were just coming in a way that he just couldn't. He just couldn't compute it, and he lost the fight on points.
Right. Yeah, no, I mean, you know, I agree. I agree with what you said. That's all fact, you know, but I still believe that, you know, Manny Pacquiao has as good of a chance as anyone to pull an upset.
Well, I didn't say he didn't have a chance. I just said that what he has is it's going to be one way or the other. Either Spence can handle it or he can't.
Right. So
now, Pacquiao has been knocked out, but each time he's been knocked out, he was on the attack. If you look at all his knockout losses, he was on the attack. He wasn't beat down and beat back and knocked out. Never. He's always coming in for the kill, and he gets caught.
Yeah. No, absolutely.
That
I mean,
is his M.O.
Yep. Those were some very classic fights. They were... I think those things have all been corrected early on. You know, he's not fighting a right-handed fighter. It should be noted that Errol Spence, of course, is a southpaw, and Manny Pacquiao is also a southpaw. So that creates a very unique set of circumstances in the ring. At the elite level, I'm sure southpaw versus southpaw isn't a big deal. At their level, they've faced enough southpaws in sparring and in fighting that they have game plans and they understand what to do to neutralize one another. And, you know, it just makes for a compelling fight because, you know, Errol Spence Jr. has a lot to prove. Certainly taking taking someone's record that's 62 fights in, you know, actually more than 62 fights in, but 62 and... with 39 knockouts is wonderful. I mean, could you imagine if he's able to retire a Manny Pac-Man Pac Pacquiao and put him into retirement, it would be incredible for his medal, for Errol Spence's medal. It's an incredible achievement if he can pull it off. I'm just saying that Manny Pacquiao,
yes,
is not someone to take lightly. And I would also say that this is the kind of fighter that you cannot prepare for. It's difficult to prepare for a fighter of the magnitude of Manny Pacquiao because it's so unorthodox. It's so unusual. And you just don't know what you're getting hit with until you're getting hit with it. You know, it comes from weird angles. It comes with a very, with a lot of speed, if in fact he, you know, focuses on his speed in the fight. And, you know, I think if Manny Pacquiao wins this fight, right, he's going to end up running the Philippines. He's going to end up being the president of the Philippines after this one. Forget a senator. This is huge, you know?
So, yes.
Yeah, I mean,
yeah, he's gearing up to run for the presidency anyway. It's already going to be given to him. I mean, it's already going to happen. So it's just a matter of time. It'll be sooner or later, but he will be the president of the Philippines.
Yeah. What an achievement.
But yeah, it's going to be, the run up to this fight is going to be a lot. It's going to be great. It's going to be great.
This is,
and I don't necessarily see Earl and him going into any negative, nasty back and forth. Because that's just not Earl's thing. You know, he's just saying, I'm going to knock you out, that kind of thing. He doesn't get into anything. And Pacquiao, he knows he needs to be diplomatic at all times. So he's not going to talk too much trash. So there's going to have to be some other elements. Maybe the trainers, Boo Boy for Pacquiao the trainer for Spence. Maybe they will create that back and forth and that animosity. Because right. Those two, just that's not their thing. And a fight this big, you need that element in there somewhere. So someone's going to have to produce that.
Yeah.
Someone's going to have to produce that.
That's a great point. I think that it should also be noted, if you're listening in, that Errol Spence, well, you are listening in, but for those of you that are listening in, Errol Spence Jr. and Manny Pacquiao are probably the two most consummate professionals, incredibly kind and personable people. They're both good human beings, right? We know that. If you follow boxing, if you follow these two, these are two good guys. I think the issue is going to be they're not good guys in the ring. Neither one of them you would want to face in the ring, okay? So I think the fight sells itself. This fight sells itself because if you don't tune into this fight, you don't love boxing. This is a classic fight. This reminds me of the fights that we used to watch, you know, very recent, but, you know, Floyd Mayweather and Manny Pacquiao. Juan Manuel Marquez and Manny Pacquiao, you know, these,
boom,
you know,
boom, Mancini and Arguello.
Right.
Remember that one?
Yes. These are the kinds of fights that really help. They're catalysts for boxing. They're great for boxing. And this is going to be, I'm delighted to see this fight. I can't wait to see this fight. And I know you can't wait to this fight. And I can't wait to come back to this podcast and listen to what we talked about these two guys, because, you know, I like to make predictions. I don't really have any skin in the game. I can make a prediction and be wrong. I'm not perfect. You're not perfect. No one out there that is listening in is perfect. But here's the thing. Manny Pacquiao is going to win this fight. And there you go. I said it.
Whoa.
So, you know, I love to all do right, that, Harold.
You go ahead and you take that with you.
you go and you take it.
I'm not gonna speculate who can win the fight.
Yes,
I'm just looking at
of course
what
not.
Skill set versus the other skill set, and I'll reserve that for another time. But as of right now, it's just gonna be a great fight, and whoever style can prevail over the other, you know, I'm being diplomatic, of course, will be the winner. So
Listen, anybody out there that is part of the WBC, IBF, WBO, any of the sanctioning belts, listen, if you need a judge, you need to bring this guy in. You need to bring Harold Hunt in, because this guy really is the consummate. Listen to him. I mean, he's always neutral, man. He's like, so you can always count on that. And listen, if you ever hear the name at a fight, you know that you're getting a quality judge that's impartial, that's really kind of just doing his job, man. And that's what you do, Harold. And that's what I love about you. So I've said it.
Thank you.
And I'll forget it. But I said it. And I meant it. So, yeah, man. Well, anyway, listen, Harold, it's really been a joy. It's been a pleasure, as it always is, to have you on the Boxing Breakdown. And I want to thank you for coming, and I want to thank the listeners for tuning in. And if you like the episode, and if you like the podcast, don't forget to like it, share it, become a subscriber on Apple Podcast, and on YouTube, hit the like and subscribe button down below. Right, Harold? Come on, give me a point down below. Help me out, Harold. Right? Share it. Right? Tell your friends. And we really, yeah, thank you, Harold. You're the man. And with that, I want to wish you peace and love. Until next time, I will see you on another edition of the Boxing Breakdown. Peace.
Fight fans, join host Mark Roxy and special guests as they break down all aspects of the boxing world, including news, business, management, training, promotions, fan reactions, upcoming events, matchups, future boxing stars, title fights, state of the boxing world, and all the stuff you don't see when you watch boxing. This podcast is released each week on Thursday at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Live streamed on YouTube, Instagram, and Facebook Live. It's the Boxing Breakdown, hosted by Mark Roxy.